Welcome, listeners, to this very special edition of the Countdown Movie and TV Reviews podcast, one which is all about horror, my favorite genre and Wayne's least favorite genre. So he's not here today, as you will no doubt not be at all surprised if you're a regular listener to the show. Instead, I've gone to the other side of the world, 16 hours the other side of the world, to recruit another horror guy, someone who watches more horror films even than I, who has seen, we'll find out exactly how many in very short order, but is Drew from the Real Feels podcast. Welcome to the Countdown.
Woo! I'm excited. Am I allowed to like fangirl now? Because I can finally be on the Countdown.
Woo! Well, you will already have picked this up, ladies and gentlemen, but I think Drew has one of the best voices in the business. Just listen to the smooth, melodic sounds of that voice. I get accused of that occasionally myself, but I think I've met my match here today. Drew is a... How many years you've been podcasting now, Drew? Feels like almost as long as us.
So we are just wrapping up our fourth year.
There you go. And while we're on the topic, because it's a great show, and Drew, as you're about to find out, is a wonderful podcaster, tell the Countdown listeners what Real Feels does.
Oh, gosh. Well, every 2 weeks, myself and my two co-hosts, Nathan and Jack, we pick a specific movie genre, and then the respective host who has that job of picking a movie for that genre, reveals it to us, and then we review that movie associated with that genre. And we do not repeat genres, so I have a giant list of genres and subgenres that is now up to 350 genres and subgenres.
Sub-sub-sub-genres.
Oh, yeah, no. You can go down that rabbit hole. And I mean, you're sitting here like, oh, gosh, does that truck have four tires? And is that a bow on top? Yep, that's a genre. Okay, trucks with bows.
I like it. And you will like it too. And you should check out, at the end of this, go over and check out the Real Feels and get a real feel for what they're putting out there. I think you're going to enjoy it. But today, Drew has squarely got his wide horror genre hat on and is going to regale us today. We're going to talk the worst and best five worst horror films of 2021. And then we'll finish up on the five best. I think it's nice to go out on a high, as we tend to do on this particular show. So, Drew, how many did you see in 2021?
I want to say it's roughly between 60 and 70. And I think that's also counting a little bit of some rewatches. But it wasn't bad. I know that if you accumulate everything, I think, oh gosh, how embarrassing would it be to be like, like 300 over like 2021 or something. Well, because Brad from the Cinema Guys, we did the whole, and quite a few others did the whole, 100 days of horror, because we were joking like, oh, people do 31 days of horror, let's do 100. And it just kind of went from there.
I've only seen 63 non-rewatched horror films this year, or things that I classify as horror films. We'll probably get into that a little bit as we progress through these lists. And of those, I would sort of, as a rough estimate, say that probably 50 are from 2021. So that's kind of what I'm picking from. So much slimmer pickings, but the listeners will be familiar, most of you will be familiar with the fact that I did a movie watching challenge with Hendo from the IMDb Journey podcast a couple of years back, and I almost hit 700 films that year. I can't even remember, actually. I could probably tell you off the top of my head. But Drew, I think I heard some ungodly number that you got to this year very recently in a chat that we share. If 300 horror films, how many did you get overall for the year?
Okay, so currently right now, I think it was like 426 or something like that is for just 2021 currently. I'm about seven films away from 700 at this moment, which I'll finish it by New Year's. Don't worry.
Well, that smashes me. My 671 from 2019, which obviously wasn't all 2019 films then either. So my hat is off. We have the right man in this chat with us on this recording today. Take us away then, Drew. What is your fifth worst film of the many, many horror films that you saw this year or from this year?
So Let's go with Jeffrey Dean Morgan in The Unholy.
That's a dishonorable mention on my list. Great choice.
It's
why was it so bad?
You know what? It's not that, and this is why it takes number five. It's not that it is an overly bad film. I just think they dropped the ball with the plot and trying to make it seem a little bit more than what they actually dished out. And, oh gosh, the animation, when you are finally kind of like revealed, it's kind of a Signs moment. When you actually see Mary, it's a little bit disappointing. I thought that Jeffrey Dean Morgan could have done a little bit better of a job. I can't think right now of the name of the lady who played the chosen one.
So the one who played Alice?
Yes, so that was it.
Her name is Cricket Brown. How could you forget that name, Drew?
You know what? Now I won't. Because it's there.
Yeah, this is one of those sort of possession kind of horror movies. And is this girl, you know, the Virgin Mary reborn, or is she something else? That kind of thing. And the reason I hated it so much is it's just not frightening. It's not even remotely frightening.
No, I think there was like a jump scare that I was like, oh, okay, all right, you got me. Now let's go. And the design of the creature reminded me a lot of the Tooth Fairy from Darkness Falls. And I thought that was kind of like, again, disappointing. You have a really nifty looking poster. You actually had an enticing trailer. And I mean, I was also on board with Jeffrey Dean Morgan because I had just finished a couple months earlier Supernatural. And I was like, let's go. Let's do this. So
100% agree with you. Jeffrey Dean Morgan was the only thing that redeemed this from being way higher. Well, didn't quite make my list. Literally had it with another possession sort of horror film as my 6-7 worst of the year. But it could easily be on that list. It is god-awful. So it's a great choice to kick it off. If not for Jeffrey Dean Morgan, yeah, this could have been almost the worst of the year. So, all right. Your five, we'll go back and forth as we tend to do on this show. My five is a film from someone who was once revered by both Wayne and I after his first film came out. About 10 years ago, maybe a little bit more now, 10, 11, 12 years ago, Neil Blomkamp. This is his first attempt at a horror movie. It's called Demonic.
Did you make the mistake
of watching this one?
Yes, I did.
Oh, my God. Like, it's a nifty idea, this concept of let's take a possession sort of horror film and take it into the digital space. So, this demon is hiding inside sort of mum's kind of
consciousness kind of, in a way
consciousness, and they have to get in there via this kind of projected 3D kind of world, whatever, hooked up to sort of the Matrix, if you will,
right? But when you have to like almost combine a Scanner Darkly with Lawnmower Man, it doesn't add up. And I thought that I don't even know what I thought. I was intrigued by the concept, but again, dropping the ball, it's so weird to track, especially when they're like, what's that in there? Oh, don't go in there. Okay, well, it's a virtual world. I should be okay.
And it takes this hard right turn, which goes into arguably interesting territory, where about halfway through the film, where it kind of reveals what these scientists really are. And I thought, well, that's got some merit, but they just squander it completely with sort of kills off screen and no characterization. And the lead actress in it, Carly Pope, who's been in a bunch of things before, she's not very like. No one's likable in this film, and they're all they can tell they're all bored. And this is a kind of, I think, like a lot of these films probably end up being a bit of a COVID-inspired decision to make, because he's been doing a lot of his stuff for that. Is it Oaks Studio? He's been making these short form sort of horror or satirical kind of sci-fi little bits and pieces, and they've been, generally speaking, they're on Netflix. You can watch them all as one if you want to. They go pretty well, but this was just garbage. And I just thought, this is the end of Neil Blomkamp. I've given up on him now as a filmmaker. Between this fucking crappy before it, then Elysium before that, we have to go all the way back to District 9 before I'm impressed by anything he's done. So no longer is his name an automatic walk-up for me to attend or watch one of his films, sadly. All right, back to you.
Well, we're going to go with a movie called Why.
Oh.
Did you watch Why?
I did not, but I would like to know why this makes your list.
Directed by Corbin Timbrook, you have a writer who finds herself being in a fight for her life against a bloodthirsty maniac who has been leaving multiple victims in his wake as he returns to the mountain town of Northdale. This movie didn't really connect for me. It seemed very discombobulated. It also kind of gave you a villain that was like always in the shadows, but never really answering any type of question for it. I was super intrigued because I'm always on board if I see something with Lance Hendrickson. And I was like, let's go. I don't care what it is. This is going to still be fine. He plays like the local sheriff, and it was just not good. And I often found myself asking, why am I watching this? And it was not good. This actually was going to be higher earlier last night, but I kind of reshuffled some things, and yeah, it only makes it 4, but it's a disappointing movie. I was really intrigued by it. I thought that it could be, again, one of those, you know, the woman goes off to try and find herself, and she's, you know, because she's taking a drive up to this cabiny area, and everything's going to be fine. And of course, you know, someone is there watching her from the woods, and the camera work is shoddy at best. And if I have to, like, you know, take a Dramamine in order to try and keep up, it's not that good.
Sounds really boring. Sounds really flat.
It is flat.
Well, that's a sad indictment. My number 4 could not be accused of being boring. It is, however, garbage. And this might be the main controversial one. Maybe there's another one on my list that people are going to be a little bit dark at me about. Because unlike the last two, which both have a sort of 2 and 1.9 on Letterboxd, this has a 2.7 stars out of 5. And it stars Nicolas Cage, who seemingly everyone wants to give a pass to everything that he does. But this year, geez, he's released some absolute fucking tripe. And this is one of them. This is Willy's Wonderland from earlier in the year. I hated this movie with such a passion.
Did you?
Look. It's a great idea. I think this film is a victim of believing a cool premise, which is this kind of weird themed restaurant where these big animatronic characters come to life and put on a show type thing, actually do come to life and murder people that come in there, even though it shut down a long time ago because of all these murders. And Cage is this drifter who is employed to clean the place, which is all a big ruse to get him murdered to appease these demons or whatever they are. And he just goes to town and starts destroying these things. It's try-hard comedy. It's not funny. There's zero character growth. The only interesting thing about the entire film is that Nicolas Cage is playing against type because he doesn't speak
or
overact with, you know, his dialogue and his monologues, and he's going off the chain. He's doing it all with his face. He's doing it all with his eyes. And even that didn't save it for me, unfortunately. I just thought the effects were lame. I thought there were gaping plot holes. These kids that they shoehorn in to give a sort of body count are so fucking dumb that they just do things that no human being would ever do, which is instantly the thing which drives me insane. And then what propels it into my top 5 is the theme tune to Willy's Wonderland, which will make you want to stick a corkscrew into your ears. I take it you didn't hate this one so much, Drew.
I didn't hate it. I was really... Again, I was very much intrigued by the idea that, like, Nick does not talk in the entire film. And I really kind of enjoyed that. I like the concept that it's kind of paying an homage to One Night at Freddy's, because that's clearly what they're going for. I think it's kind of neat. Is it like a great movie overall? No, but it's still a fun movie that I can enjoy. And you're right. The kids do stupid, stupid stuff like, oh, we're in this murderous old restaurant. Hey, baby, you want to get it on?
Yes.
Like, what's that in the corner? No, don't worry about it. Has that always been there? Yes. No. let's burn the sucker down. I was gonna say, like, you're never given any real answers for. Also, his timer goes off all the time, and you're like, what are you drinking? What is this like energy drink or soda that you constantly have to have? Like, why is this your lifeblood that apparently is happening?
Gives him his edge, I guess, is the only thing
I can only assume so.
Yeah, nothing drives me more insane than characters doing dumb things just to service the plot to keep the movie moving. Like, if it doesn't organically work, if it's not even remotely realistic, even in a film like this, I'm done. I'm out. I can't do it. And yet, we sat through this and we reviewed the whole thing. And if you really want to, torture yourself more. You can check that one back out from probably around February, March. I think we reviewed it. So, yep, that one climbs at number four for me. What about your number three, Drew?
So, number three might, like, as you said, Willy's Wonderland was controversial. My number three is probably going to be controversial. I know it's going to be controversial with Gerald of Two Peas on a podcast. And it is, it's 2021's Till Death.
Oh, damn. I wouldn't classify this as a horror personally, but fine, well, go ahead.
I think it fits
Gerald's reaction, I'm all up for hearing this.
So, I mean, it fits, in my opinion, like as like a subgenre of horror because it goes for the thriller, which actually is what it is categorized as IMDb. But
yeah,
this movie, as I even told Dan, or like Dan had said, like, no, from Netflix and Swill, he's like, no, Swill. I'm not an idiot. Megan is the worst part of this whole film. I'm like, God bless you. You've redeemed yourself. And this movie could have ended in the first 30 minutes. 100% could have ended in the first 30 minutes.
Tell everyone what it's about, the basic premise.
Oh, my apologies. Yes. A woman is left handcuffed to her dead husband after he has found out that she was having an affair. And so he handcuffs her to himself. And then, you know, she wakes up the next morning and, you know, they're celebrating their anniversary and he's being sweet, romantic. He set up the cabin. And
but creepy as fuck.
But creepy as hell.
Controlling.
Yes. Very.
Asshole.
Yes. And so the next morning he's like, okay. Or like, did you sleep well? Good. Hey, I wanted to tell you something. And then he like blows his head off and his body just falls to the ground and she's stuck there handcuffed and she can't get out because there's no key. He has taken all the clothing out of the household, which I don't care how drugged you've made your wife. Like, how are you getting all this done in the time that you had? He took out all the utensils. He took out anything that she could possibly break the handcuffs off with. There's no clothes except for her former wedding dress. He has set up the car with recordings saying like, hey, baby, I didn't know if you'd make it this far, but I'm glad and proud of you. And if she would have, I guess, just in my mind, logically, and I guess the franticness of being in the situation, sure, you can argue that. But there's so many things in that top room that she was in where if she had just like smashed or, you know, pounded his wrist, his lifeless wrist, it could have broken off and then she could have taken the handcuff off and she would have been free. Yeah,
broken his thumb.
Right.
His
thumb out, something. Yeah. Something. So
you do have to get on board with the premise, and I understand where you're coming from. If that knocked it completely into terrible territory for you.
Yeah,
that
did
for
me.
It was well directed. I liked the way it was set up early. And as much as I know we're not supposed to say this anymore, no one hires Megan Fox for her acting abilities. it's pretty simple. It's pretty straightforward. If you are into women, then chances are you'll find her attractive, and that's all it's meant to be here. That said, I didn't think she was terrible. She was fine for me. And therefore, where the film went, I kind of didn't mind it. So, yeah, I'm also on Gerald's side here. I'm a defender of this movie, Drew.
That's nice
that there is, because you are the polar opposite to me. If I'm Negatron, you're Positron. And you tend to love everybody film. So, this is a rare occasion and one which I celebrate.
I can tend to try and find a lot of good things, even in bad movies. Yeah.
But not this one.
Not this one.
All right, why number three then is not going to be controversial at all, and I don't think many people have seen it, so I don't want to spend too much time on it. It's a sequel to a Netflix film from Poland last year, which is my sort of where my forefathers come from. Nobody Sleeps in the Woods Tonight 2, directed by Bartosz M. Kowalski. This is the first one is basically Wrong Turn by way of Poland,
okay,
with all the weird European sensibilities thrown into it, and it's not good, but it had some entertaining kills and it was pretty bloodthirsty, good enough to get like a 2 stars.
All right,
this one go ahead.
Oh no, I was gonna say, like, I had seen Nobody Sleeps in the Woods on Netflix and I never got around to it, so seeing that there is a sequel to it, I'm a little bit more intrigued now, because I always like to see where are they gonna take things now, can they take things more.
Well, in that case, I'm not going to spoil what makes this film so terrible. I will leave you and the listeners to find out for yourselves if you are brave enough to step into said woods.
Oh,
but
Jesus.
This film takes such a turn into the ridiculous. It's already dumb. Don't get me. They up the gore. They're trying up the gore quotient, which every horror sequel will do if that's what it's about. but they add even stupider characters, people you cannot get behind. There's not one likable person in this film, which really makes it hard. Put all that to one side, the film feels like it's going to end half an hour before it does because they whittled the cast away that fast. And then this thing happens, and I was just like, you have got to be fucking shitting me. It is unbelievably terrible, and there are no words I could possibly do it justice with, so just see it is my not recommendation. Good luck to you if you do, and you'll know exactly what I'm talking about when the moment happens. Come back and let me know what you think, Drew, if you do sit through these two films.
Oh, Lord.
All right, runners up for the worst film of horror film of 2021.
All right, so let's go with 2021's The Resort, which I was very fervently warned by our friend Patrick to not tread anywhere near it, constantly warning, saying it's the worst thing ever. And I was like, you know what? I will join you in this misery and I will check it out. So you have four friends that are heading to Hawaii to investigate an abandoned hotel, and that supposedly it's haunted, and they want to go, you know, check this place out because I don't know reasons. And I also like was looking stuff up while I was watching it because you don't 100% need to pay attention. fake hotel, fake island. So I was like, oh, you're not even like giving actual history of certain places. But they're going to look for the infamous half-faced girl.
Ooh, scary.
Trembling. And so, I mean, when they're arriving, it's just like this, okay, is anything real? They're not finding anything kind of worthwhile. But then, you know, of course, in the background, like they see a door slam or a shadow is moving. And then they eventually are kind of just going up with the concept of like, we're not alone here. And it's just bad. It's dumb. The acting is stupid. You have a plot that is typically going nowhere. Things happen for no reason. I'm not a fan of it. I should have listened to reason from people who tried Patrick. To give me poor Patrick. Taylor Chien is the director, and I'm not familiar exactly with what they have. Yeah, I'm looking at the IMDb real quick, and I can't see anything that would even bring up anything that I have. No, nothing.
Well, I'm looking at the Wikipedia page, and you know, I've made this point before, but you know someone is really nowhere when their name underwritten and directed by doesn't even have a link to their own Wikipedia page. So no one's been bothered with that. 75 minutes long, huh? And it still sucks that much.
It's awesome. Yeah, it's pretty bad. It's got a 3.1 out of 10 on IMDb, and I believe this is one of the films that I gave like a half star on Letterboxd. Either a half star or a one. Maybe I gave a one because I was just generous. I can't remember exactly.
Yeah, oddly enough, I didn't give any half stars to any of these films. They're all one star for one reason or another. For the horror, I gave half star films, don't get me wrong, but they just weren't from 2021 for the horror genre anyway. Okay, well, I will definitely be avoiding that. I thought it was another zombie one I thought it was also called The Resort from about 2 or 3 years ago. And I'm thinking the whole time you guys were talking about that in the chat that we sort of share through Gerald. Wow, I kind of like that movie. I don't know why they hated it so much. But now I realize it was a completely different one. And I think it might have been called The Resort with like Z.
Oh, with the Z?
Instead of an S, you know?
Oh, you know what? Okay, so there is a resort with a Z. 2015, yep. Safari Park. Yep, mini zombies.
Yep, that one's okay. When I say I quite liked it, like 2.5 stars.
So. Okay.
Got it mixed up. Fair enough. My number two is one of these films which was clearly a script was written for a horror film, and they arguably one way or the other decided that they were going to do a found footage film. And then some bright boffin said, why don't we take it to Blumhouse and let him fuck it up the ass by making it a Paranormal Activity film? So my number two, the second worst horror movie from 2021 I sat through, was Paranormal Activity : Next of Kin. There is only one thing about this movie which is even remotely redeemable, and that is the solid lead performance from Emily Bader, her name is. She is fine in an otherwise piece of shit that has nothing redeemable about it. It is completely non-frightening, it is completely unsurprising, and it is borderline incoherent at times in terms of following this woman who finds out that she has an Amish heritage that they reach out to her and ask her to come basically pay a visit. So a cousin or something or other comes and picks her up, and she decides to take her boyfriend, who's an amateur filmmaker, and they get some sound guy that they find online, because that's the way you do sound, guys. And the three of them go into this Amish village, and clearly things are off, and it doesn't take long to work this out at all. There's a church that stands in the middle of nowhere, which they're told to stay away from it. And that alone would be the point where you would just go, thanks very much for visiting, we're out of here. They don't, and the film makes all these contrivances to keep them there as things escalate. And eventually, it's all revealed. I won't spoil it again here. But this isn't a Paranormal Activity film. There's not one scene where there's a locked-off camera watching people sleep, or an empty room and seeing what happens when people aren't around. That's the whole signature of Paranormal Activity. The whole thing is meant to be around what's happening when we can't see it. This is just carry the camera around, shake it up anytime something supernatural or scary happens so we can't really get a good look at it. It is a $5 million massive turd. Do not, under any circumstances, bother. Did you see it, Drew, and do you have a differing opinion?
I did not see it. I know that it was up and waiting, but I felt like I had better things to watch, and it sounds like did.
700 of them, and I think that's about right. there you go. So that's my number two. So here we go then. The worst of 2021, Drew, tell us, what should we be avoiding like the plague?
So I would very much avoid Will Wernick's Safer at Home.
Ooh, never heard of this one.
Okay, so it is a COVID movie, essentially, is what it is. So
one at number one too.
Yep, you have people who are stuck and isolated at home. There is a curfew that they have to abide by, and they're having essentially like a Zoom party. 2 years into a pandemic, you have a group of friends that are, you know, throwing their Zoom party. After taking ecstasy, things go for a terrible turn when one of the girls kind of gets into a fight with her boyfriend, not even a fiance. I think one of the upsetting plot lines is that he still hasn't like proposed, if I remember right. And she falls and like cracks her head. So blood is going around, and everyone is just like, it's just everyone looking at a Zoom camera, and they're just like, what's going on? Where'd she go? Is she okay? I'm freaking out. And that's all it is. And the boyfriend, fiance, like, he is trying to make things okay. He's trying to go get help, but then he leaves. So he's still like high on ecstasy, running around outside. And then it switches from the computer camera to his cell phone camera. And it's so disorienting and just not good. I don't feel that I need to like watch a movie on a screen while it's filmed on a screen. And not to say that there isn't anything that can't be done well with having movies where it is through an actual screen. What's the one where they did like a seance?
Host
was great.
Yep.
But this is so, so bad. And I was kind of disappointed because I really liked the directors, or at least I liked the twist of the movie, because from 2020, he did a movie called Follow Me. And I really liked that twist for the film itself. And that one, essentially, they go to a social media star goes to Russia and they go to check out. Yeah. Okay. Well, I mean, that's fine. Like, I'm not saying it's like great, but I enjoyed the twist that came from it at the end. And again, that one better than this. Dude, I would not watch Safer at Home. Just watch, I don't know, watch Host if you want everything else.
Everything else, right. Including possibly this one for me. My number one worst horror film because of the talent that was behind this. I thought, this could be good. This is from director and writer Ben Wheatley, who's done a bunch of stuff which people will probably be familiar with, especially if you're into horror films. So he did Kill List, is probably his most famous movie. Did a pretty good film called Sightseers in 2012. More recently, he's done High Rise, which I didn't like, and Free Fire, which is okay. And then he did that Rebecca remake on Netflix last year. So he's got some chops, although I find, if it doesn't really hit for me, I find his filmmaking to be extremely boring and tedious. And that's what this one is. It's called In the Earth. It was released early this year, and my understanding was it shot over 15 days in the middle of COVID. And the whole film takes place as a deadly virus ravages the world. And it ends up becoming this kind of the nature is fighting back type stuff. Not quite the Happening level, because that would actually arguably be a more entertaining film. This one just follows this guy who's doing some research and whatever, and he goes out into these woods where the ground, the vegetation is more fertile, and there's legends of some forest spirit, and he runs across this crazy dude who takes him captive, and then that crazy dude's, I don't know, ex-wife is his ex-girlfriend or something. She happens to be out there as well, and she rescues him from this crazy guy. And from there, it goes completely off the edge. It's meant to be this kind of, oh, wow, everything's paranoid, and there's sort of people on drug trips and all this kind of stuff. None of it works. I fell asleep at least four times watching this. We had to go back and rewatch it. So it made a 107-minute film feel like about 6 days long, which did it no help whatsoever. It is fucking awful. It is arduous and it is boring. And I know that they did this in a COVID-affected time. Hats off to them for trying. But when this amount of talent's involved, something should have been comprehensible. Something should have come out of this where I felt like, hey, this wasn't just a pretentious pile of wank, which you know is a case when real critics give it a kind of higher score and people then feel like they need to follow suit. So this has a 3 out of 5 on Letterboxd, which is just absolutely mind-blowing to me.
Yeah.
Did you see it, Drew?
I did not see it. The way you're almost describing it, it almost has like that frantic sense where people are just running around. It almost sounds a little bit like Netflix's In the Tall Grass.
I like that one better. Way better.
Oh, because well, yeah. Yeah.
At least it had some action in it. At least there was some urgency. This one, I was just like, so? Who cares? Like, here's this one random dude who all we know is that he had an ex-girlfriend and you know, he's a bit of... Everyone's a bit germophobic because of, you know, COVID. And that's... We're meant to care about him? Couldn't give a shit. Hmm. Couldn't give a shit about anybody, so...
Interesting.
Otherwise,
I was going to say, I see that it was nominated for like 7 different awards. So, I mean, I guess somebody liked it, but Dan.
Yeah, well, I mean, lots of people, like I said, I think you see the name Ben Wheatley on it and people just give it an automatic high grade, which I hate that. It just drives me insane because, ooh, he's highbrow and the critics like it. Therefore, we too must also acknowledge its greatness. when I say the critics liked it, I think it was like, it's not like it scored heaps and heaps. It's kind of like a 70% on Rotten Tomatoes. So, there we go. That is it for the worst of the year thus far. Any really quick mentions of dishonorable mentions for you, Drew?
You know what? No, I tried to focus on the happy.
Well, let's do that. Let's get out of this negative state of mind. Let's talk about the best of what 2021 had to offer. And I think there's actually been some really good ones this year. I'm quite happy to say. Over to you again, Drew. What's your number 5 best horror film of the year?
So I was pleasantly surprised with this, which when I rented it, I enjoyed the synopsis. But then when I started, I was like, oh, this is a foreign film. I didn't realize that this was actually going to be, you know, having subtitles and in what I assume is Spanish, of course. But it is The Last Matinee.
Oh, okay. Don't know if I've heard of this one.
Okay, so it's a rainy day and people are coming in to get out of the rain and go see essentially what is like a horror movie marathon. And it's an old theater. However, there's one issue with the fact of coming in out of the rain and wanting to sit down, maybe get dry and enjoy a movie. It's that one of the patrons in the audience is a serial killer.
Oh, okay.
And so you have such an interesting way that it's shot and set up. And while people are doing their jobs and it's very like minimal, like skeleton crew, like one person's running the projector and one person is just making sure that everyone is doing okay inside. So you have 2 employees and all the while the guy, the serial killer is going around like locking doors, making sure that there's no exits. And in precise moments, either coming up behind or strategically like offing people.
Okay, nice.
Where no one is finding or noticing that this is happening. And there's a moment towards the end where it's almost that moment from like Terrifier where I sent everybody that picture. We're saying like, it takes a lot to shock me. But this was my face at that moment in Terrifier when the lady
gets... You're talking about for sure. Yep.
Yeah. And so there's a moment here where it wasn't as shocking, but like I watched it and I was just like, oh. And so
all right. I mean, yeah, this sounds great.
I liked it. It was very fun. Yeah, enjoyable characters, good kills, simplistic plot.
What more could you ask for?
Okay. Yeah, exactly. Great. Yeah.
The Last Matinee from, is it Spanish, is it?
I want to say it's Spanish. So it came out in 2020, but the US release due to COVID didn't come out until April of 2021. Yep. So that's why I'm counting it. Director Maximiliano Continti.
Added to the watch list. Thank you very much, Drew.
No problem.
My number five horror film of 2021 is my one anthology film, which makes the list. It is a good return to form for the VHS series. It's VHS 94. Did you see this one, Drew?
I didn't, and I'm kind of mad that I didn't get on top of it because I have it in the watch list, and I meant to watch it last night just so I could be like, maybe this is just going to make a quick go for the list, but no, I didn't get to see it, but I enjoy the VHS series.
I also tried that just this night. Before we started recording, I watched a horror film hoping it would make one list or the other because I thought it could go one way or the other. Sadly, it fell right in the middle. So that was Black Friday. I guess we'll find out if that makes your list at all. This is the typical anthology horror film. There's a bunch of SWAT people break into a cult's lair in the 90s, and there's TV screens everywhere, and there's videotapes that are playing on them, and they stop to watch certain video screens, and there's all these weird and horrifying sort of events that have been captured or recorded in that sort of found footage way and stuck on these tapes. And the wraparound story is by far the worst part of this movie. That's what drags it down to number five and what in the end was a very high 3-star rating for me. I would love to say that had that been better, I think this could have been right up there for me because a couple of these stories are outright excellent. Timo Dejajangchol, there we go, that'll do, from Indonesia, who did the infamous VHS 2 segment about the cult. He comes back to this one and again lends his crazy sensibility. There's an excellent ghost one from Simon Barrett, who's one of the original directors as well. And the other two stories in there aren't bad either. So I thoroughly recommend, if you're into anthology films, checking this out. Don't be put off by VHS Virus, which was god-awful from about 5 years ago. This one is much, much better and up there with the first and second one in the series.
Well, I'm game. I mean, anthology horror is probably up there in my top three, like, styles of horror. So I am more than game.
All right. Nice. What's your number four?
Number four, and Brad from the Cinema Guys is going to be very happy. It's Psycho Gorman.
Yeah, I left this off, Brad. I'm sorry. It would make my list if I counted as a horror. I just thought it was a comedy straight through and through. A gory comedy.
It does have the comedy. Obviously, it's there. And when you have Nita Josie, Hannah, playing Mimi, watching her, I got Louise Belcher from Bob's Burgers 100%. And it could not have made me happier watching Psycho Gorman. But
Shameful admission time. Sorry. I've never watched Bob's Burgers.
So. Oh, Paul, do yourself a favor. It's it's pretty cute. It's a funny show. It's easy watching is what I should say. All right, so Psycho Gorman, if no one has watched this, you have brother and sister Mimi and Luke who unknowingly and unwittingly like resurrect an ancient alien overlord, which seems like it's a bad 90s kids show like plot immediately coming into play. Kind of like how, you know, in Power Rangers, like the astronauts unknowingly release like Rita Repulsa and using the magical amulet that kept him at bay, Mimi is able to control Psycho Gorman. And I guess she just wants to, like, be the boss of him. And she thinks it's just cool as shit. And it's funny to watch her play this role. I really enjoyed it. For Matthew Ninneber, I want to say, is that how you say his name? But he played Psycho Gorman. It was just fun. It also gave me a lot of like Doctor Who vibes, especially okay. with the extra aliens coming in saying like, "Hey, boss, long time no see," and the council of aliens and going like, "What are we going to do?"
Yeah, don't be put off by that because I know some people hate Doctor Who and some people hate the Power Rangers, me included. But even though I think this took the best parts of the Power Rangers and put it in this gory, grotesque shell. But you're right. I think your love or lack of love, because there are some people who hate this movie,
sure,
rests on, I think, Mimi And if you can get behind what she's doing, it's a very silly film. It's very funny. Like, this is absolutely laugh out loud at times in this film. And it's in my top 20 of the year overall. Don't think it's going to quite crack my number 10. Sorry, Brad. But I think it's a good choice if you count it as a horror. So very nicely played too.
Yeah, I think it's good. Definitely worth a watch. Maybe not as much as Brad. I think he said he's watched this at least 10 times. That's too much.
That's too much. In 1 year, for crying out
loud. In one year.
I've watched Fury Road 10 times in the last bloody 7 years. So. All right. My number four then is one which I think anyone who's on the horror scene saw, and I think most people enjoyed it, though I will acknowledge, I think where it falls away is in the last sort of 15, 20 minutes of the film. But Nia DaCosta's Candyman legacy sequel, as I like to call it, is where this one falls for me. Again, a little bit divisive, although this is by far the highest rated film we've talked about so far for me, 3.3 on Letterboxd. I really liked it. I thought it was really atmospheric. I thought it was beautifully filmed. I thought it was a good follow-up and build upon what took place from the original, which I think kind of just issues all the follow-ups to it, just right back to the Virginia Madsen original, as per Clive Barker's original story. And where it just fell apart was sort of how it all came together in that last sort of 15 minutes. And some of the Candyman rules were bent very, very far in this movie. I think most would agree. Like, he's killing people that didn't even say his name. Okay.
That right.
Seems a bit strange to me. What's the whole point of it then? But otherwise, yeah, I thought it was moody atmospheric, some great kills. And that's good enough to make it on my list. What do you think of Candyman?
I actually very much enjoyed Candyman. I loved the continuation of the story. I loved actually getting a deeper backstory and understanding that Candyman has just always been here. I don't want to say it is like, it sounds wrong to put it this way, but I think it also does it in a way a little bit justice to say that it is very much like a black empowerment film where you have the idea that like Candyman only comes from the social injustice that is put upon certain individuals in historical context. And it's taking real events and it's saying that like this is where, unfortunately, this drive of like hatred and vengeance is kind of coming from. And that's not putting it lightly in a way. But I really liked that backstory. I loved the puppetry. The puppetry scenes were brilliant, I think. I thought they had done really well on that. It's very different. When you look at all of the little Easter eggs and the different shots of the places that you're like, oh, I know that. I know that from one. I know that from two. I think the only disservice that we kind of get is some of the kills, but I think it's also very unique to watch it in that manner where we're backing away with the camera from like the apartment room. And you're just like, no, I want up close and personal as they're getting slammed into the mirror or the window. But luckily, you know, it's clear enough to where you can still see what's happening.
Well, I actually quite like that kill. I thought the big streak of blood across the window.
Oh, no, and that's a nice touch. Yeah. And that's exactly why I'm kind of forgiving of that, because it's like, okay, it's still very clear what's happening, but you also liked it. I mean, if you can get up close and personal with it, I think it would have done wonders, but it's still good.
All right. Well, good. Nice that you're on board with that one. How about your number three?
Number three goes to a film that I was really surprised by, and especially by the young boys who were in it. And this is 2021's The Boy Behind the Door. And
okay, yeah, I heard about this one. I'm gonna be talking it up.
So I know I was definitely talking it up because I was very, very impressed by it. So it's directed by David Charbonnier and Justin Powell, and it features Lonnie Chavis, who plays Bobby, and Ezra Dewey, who plays Kevin. After Bobby and his best friend Kevin are kidnapped and taken to a strange house in the middle of nowhere, Bobby manages to escape. But as he starts to make a break for it, he hears Kevin scream for help and realizes that he can't leave his friend behind. So I think it's pretty predictable as to like, hey, little boy, want some candy? Throw into van, drive into the middle of nowhere. And you can kind of deduce like where it's going to go with that. Yep. And it's unfortunate that that is like the premise for it. But I think it's also like the shock value of it that makes you so into it. And I was pleasantly impressed with the boys' ability to like make me fearful for them. Like I was so invested in their story and they're getting away or, you know, getting some type of revenge for it. And I very much enjoyed this movie. I really liked it.
Well, that's a hardcore recommendation. And I get like what you're saying, you know, obviously it's an awful set of circumstances, but that's a horror movie, right?
Oh, yeah.
You don't have a horror movie about, I don't know, someone's first date being beautiful and wonderful and lovely unless things go south in a really significant kind of way. So as much as it's an uncomfortable subject matter, that's also horror's point is to, mm-hmm. to make you uncomfortable, put you on the, if not edgiest seat, then make you cringe and like, oh my God. And wonder, what would I do? What would you do if your friend was caught up in some awful situation like that?
Right.
We're not kids, obviously, so it'd be a lot different. But yeah, book sounds really intriguing. All right, my number three. This one's going to cop me some shit, I know, because eventually this film, this series kind of shat the bed. But I was really impressed by Lee Janik's Fear Street, (1994). First one in this R.L. Stine's adaptation of Fear Street series, which was this real experiment by Netflix. I guess you saw them, Drew, the Fear Street films?
Mm-hmm. Saw them all.
I like this idea. If we have a film on a Friday and then there's made all three of them, we have a film another Friday a week later and then a week after that, we have another one again. And I really dug that. So we didn't have to wait because I don't think it would have worked. I certainly would have been back for the third one after the second one if it wasn't 1 week later. But this first one sets up this sort of mythos, sets up this town, sets up some really brutal kills, which surprised the shit out of me, I have to say. That's what really won this up the list for me, because first hour in, I'm like, yeah, look, this is a well-made, well-scored, yes, lots of needle drops. I know people got pissed off at that, but, you know, at least there were needle drops of songs that I liked, generally speaking, from sort of that era or around it, because I know a couple of songs were actually out after 1994. But what I really dug was the fact that we set up these five or six characters and then they offed a couple of them really brutally at the end of the film with the most memorable death scene of the year by a million miles involving a bread slicer.
Yes!
Yes. I was in. I was like, man, I'm in for this. Let's see where they go with this now for the second one. And yeah, they gradually fell away after that. But nevertheless, this first one, I enjoyed a lot and I hardcore recommend it to anyone who's a horror film fan. Don't be put off by the sort of teenageriness of it. They really go places in terms of the gore and the darkness of what they're doing here.
100%. Couldn't agree more. Growing up, I was a huge R.L. Stine fan with Goosebumps and Fear Street. So when I heard that they were coming out with this, I was floored.
Ah, okay. So you've read them?
Oh, yeah.
Whereas I'd never even heard of them before, so it was, I was completely new to it. I had no idea what to expect. I was all just like, yeah, sure, what the hell. All right, well, that's my number three. So
great.
We're over to runners-up for the best of the year.
Mm. So I'm going to go with one that I very much enjoyed, his first film that came out on Shudder, which was Scare Me, but Josh Rubin's Werewolves Within. Very much like this movie and watched it again last night and introducing it to three of my friends who had never seen it. And I was just super excited for them to watch it. I was again excited to watch it. This movie is fun. This movie is fun purely for the fact that I love that it's based on a like a board game. And so you have Ranger Finn Wheeler coming to the small town of, I think it's like Beaver's Lodge, Beaverton or something. And he's a transfer ranger. And this small little town is trying to be taken over essentially by like a pipeline industry. And they're trying to buy the properties. But some people are like, nope, we're not going to go. We want to stay here. This is our town. No amount of money, you know, et cetera, et cetera. And things just start to go awry. A dog goes missing. A woman's husband has already like supposedly up and left for having an affair with a young lady. Just, it is a, as they put it, it's a whodunit with teeth. Because as things are transpiring, the power goes out, the road is blocked, they're all like suspecting each other, and people start either, you know, getting bit or attacked, or people start turning on each other. I think it's fun. I enjoy the writing that Josh Rubin has. It's my kind of humor. So, yeah, it hit the mark for me.
Well, very nice. Yeah. Again, it's got werewolves. Or at least we think it's got werewolves. That's the sort of setup. So I understand it's a horror film. But again, I found this to be more of a comedy. There was very little gore in this sort of film. There's a couple of moments, but it's mostly a whodunit, right? That's what it basically ended up being. Yeah. More of a mystery than anything else.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm probably, you know, and I'm doing this with the guy who's got 350 genres and subgenres and sub-subgenres, but I'm splitting hairs on the genres here. That said, I didn't like it as much as most. Maybe I heard too many people talk it up. So I was expecting it to be more of a werewolf film, and I got more of a mystery film. So that's on me in terms of my expectations. But it's a fine film. And who's the main guy in it again? Who was in Tomorrow War?
Sam Richardson.
Yeah, I thought this was by far his best movie, because I've seen him.
Oh, yeah.
Now that I've seen his face, and I sort of know who he is, not his name, obviously, but I've seen him in a lot of popping up in little bits and pieces and stuff from 10 years ago. I'm like, oh, that's that dude from Werewolves Within and The Tomorrow War.
Right, right. You see him in tiny little things, and so now you start to realize that, oh, okay, I've seen him in this, and then he's given the recognition that I think Werewolves Within is kind of like pushing him a little bit more. I mean, not that Tomorrow War was anything to write home about, but I liked his character in that. But this is great. I thought he was, I thought he did so well in this. And Milana Vayntrub, who's the AT&T girl.
Again, which was completely lost to me. I heard lots of people saying that when I went, I'm like, so what's the AT&T girl? I don't
so get she, it. she does the little AT&T commercials, which it was so fun just to watch her, because you never saw her in anything else except for those commercials. And when you see her brought in this film, you're like, holy crap, it's the AT&T girl. And you also have so many people on the internet backing her, where she had done a cosplay dressing up as Squirrel Girl. And they're like,
okay,
make her Squirrel Girl. Make that woman Squirrel Girl. Invite her to the Marvel, MCU.
Oh, she was good too. So, yeah, I can see why this was a surprise a little bit for me to be so high on your list, but I can see why it made it there. So, nice stuff. My number two is equally a surprise for me. I watched this film expecting nothing. It's a Shudder original, and it's called Vicious Fun, directed by Cody Callahan.
Yes! Thank you, Paul.
You saw this one. Obviously, you liked it then, Drew?
I did like it. I liked the concept. The premise of this is so much fun. I just wish I wish the main guy was slightly more likable, but it's the accoutrement, it's the entourage of everybody that kind of makes it up for me.
Yeah, you've just nailed my big complaint with it. If you had just made the guy be more likable, it could still go through the same arc of, you know, appreciating the roommate and all that kind of stuff. But if he was just a bit of a nicer guy, wasn't so full of himself, because he's basically playing a horror reviewer who, what's the word I'm looking for here, he's in lust with his roommate, who's way out of his league, and he decides to tail this new guy who's dropped her off at the house one night to try and discredit him in her eyes. And he winds up at this bar, and then eventually winds up in this group of effectively serial killers who are coming together as a bit of a, not so much a serial killing anonymous where they're trying to stop, but where they're kind of bragging about their exploits to one another and trying to better understand what makes everyone tick. And they mistake him for being a missing serial killer from the night, which all gets explained as the film progresses. And it's bloodthirsty. And like you said, the serial killers all sort of stand out. We've got David Kochner as one. The guy who played sort of, I don't know if it was Death in Supernatural.
Yeah, he played Death.
He did. Julian Riching? You'll recognize him immediately.
You know his face. And I love the fact that he's in it, because you look at him and you're like, I can see him as a serial killer. You know what? This works. This works for me.
They're all these sort of very telling and memorable characters all on their own, even their names, again, are not. And what they bring their own unique style to serial killing. And of course, once they realize this kid basically is in their midst, they try and kill him. And so his desperate efforts to stay alive. I'll say no more about the plot, because it does go in some interesting directions a little bit. And yeah, I just had a lot of fun. Some great kills again, some good gory fun. As you've already said, Drew, and I've agreed, if he was just a little bit more likable, this would have been probably number one with a bullet. So, yeah, good fun. Check it out. And that brings us to our number ones, the best horror film of the year, according to us. Drew's seen a lot more than me, so this should carry more weight. Drew, what is your best film of the year?
So, one that I think that made it a little bit more enjoyable is because I watched it, you know, side by side, per se, with other our podcaster friends at the same time watching it, one of them being Gerald of 2Ps, but it's Brandon Christensen's Superhost on Shudder.
Oh, okay.
I very much like Superhost. It was a shocking twist of events where you have two people who review bed and breakfasts.
Okay.
And they're traveling vloggers. They're going around and, you know, reviewing different places. And they check into a vacation rental where the host who owns the place is like, okay, let's do anything to make you happy. And it's just, it's the intrusion of like personal space. But she has this like crazy ex-girlfriend vibe about her where she's nutty. She is so nutty. And it's funny. You have a appearance by Barbara Crampton as well in the film, which makes it work for me. And I very much enjoy this. Gracie Gillum plays the host, and it's just fun. It's just downright fun. It doesn't have as high a score as Werewolves Within for me, but I think because I think the twisting of how crazy she gets just makes it that just a little bit more palatable for in some cases.
Wow, that is a complete shock to me. I haven't heard anyone talk about this one. So, okay. So I'm going to have to check this one out too. Superhost. Very, very nice. I can't add anything to it. I'm sorry, because I haven't seen it. I'll guarantee you've seen my number one horror film of the year. And this will be no surprise to anyone who's listened to the show, who has followed sort of my interest in this particular film series now. But my number one is A Quiet Place Part 2, directed by John Krasinski. I know it was made last year, but of course it didn't reach cinemas or get distribution until this year. So I think it sort of qualifies, or 100% qualifies. I really dug this one as a follow-up sequel. I maybe not quite as on the edge of my seat as I was on the first one, but I got the same experience again. I think they built really well on what happens at the end of the first one. And I think John Krasinski is a really great early in his career director, because he elicits so much from this world and from actors who aren't able to rely upon basically talking at normal levels like most films will allow them to do. All of them are good in this. Obviously, his wife, Emily Blunt, Cillian Murphy is in this one as well. But I think the real standout is Millicent Simmons, the daughter. She just goes from strength to strength in this movie. And when the film does that thing now, which is getting to be a little bit of a cliche, where it, but it works. Don't get me wrong, this is one of the first films to do it, where we hear things from her perspective and things are moving in the background behind her, but she can't hear anything.
Right.
And she's deaf. Very powerful and a really, really impressive film. So, yeah, that was my number one, probably with a bullet, to be honest. Nothing came close for me in 2021.
Okay.
You not a fan of this particular one?
No. I liked it, but I think, as you had said, like, it didn't put me on the edge of my seat like A Quiet Place 1, but I think that's also, you know, due to the fact that you know what the creatures are. Yeah. But I very much enjoyed it because I think it's the closest thing that we're coming to until it actually does come out. Of The Last of Us, the video game series.
Yes.
This is probably one of the closest things that I can see, especially the walking around and the daughter going to the train station by herself and checking out things. And is it safe to reach in here? And I do like, as you said, it's quiet, or you have that constant like high pitch hum. And in the background, you see it creeping towards her, because that gives you involved as an audience to sit there and scream, turn around, turn around.
Oh, my God. Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, there we are. So that's our fives. Very quickly, Drew, because we are running a little bit long, but do you have any honorable mentions you want to throw out there to the listeners in case they want to pad out their watch list as well heading into 2022?
Netflix's Blood Red Sky is going to be an honorable mention.
Good point. How do I forget that? That should have been... Oh, my God.
It's...
Yep, all right. That's definitely honorable mention.
It's up there. And if you want to really kind of just take in... and just have a real feeling of, honestly, the last like 2 years, go watch 2021's Silent Night.
Interesting. Yeah. Yep. That was one you can't really talk about without...
yeah, exactly. Without really you can't. That's why. All you got to do. That's all you got to do.
The only other one for me was The Night House, which...
Yeah.
I watched very recently. I liked it. I didn't love it. I thought it was... There was a lot going on in the film, and I think it's a pretty good character study, or a study of grief and how it sort of all plays out. Wasn't all that enraptured with the way it kind of wrapped up, though, which is what kept it off my list. But still, a good film and very well made. It's just a very slow burn, so prepare yourself for that. All right, that's our list, the best and worst of 2021 horror. We hope you found something to watch as well as things to avoid. But Drew, I want to thank you so much for taking the time and on very short notice to put this together and come on the show with me. I really, really appreciate it. Thank you, sir.
Oh, well, thank you.
can you tell listeners about where to find the Real Feels podcast and what you've got coming up maybe on the show?
Oh, gosh. Well, you can find the Real Feels podcast up on Twitter. We are at Real Feels Pod, Facebook, Instagram, and really any podcatcher out there, you can find us. We come out every other Wednesday with a new episode. And usually at the end of the month, we have a special kind of a mini episode where myself, Jack, and Nathan talk about just really what we've been watching.
There you go. Right. Do check it out and tell them that I sent you, or we sent you, the Countdown sent you. When you do, I think you're going to have a good time. And you know how to find us. Search the Countdown Movie and TV Reviews Podcast. One of my projects this year is to actually build a website. Dan keeps telling me how easy it is to do. So I'd like to have a one-stop shop for where to go for all things Countdown. So we'll see whether I get around to that. But in the meantime, you can check us out on Twitter at the Countdown PC. Like and follow the show on Podbean, where we host, and get involved in the discussion around our topics and all things movie and film in the Facebook listener community. Link is in the show notes. Thank you so much for joining us today. This one won't be out just in time for the new year. So I hope you've had a good new year. And we all hope 2022 is a much better year than the last couple have been. Thanks again to Drew for joining me. And that's it from us. Take care. We'll catch you next time.